What would you do if you got scammed? Would you suffer in silence, or would you do something about it? Well, I got scammed once, and this is the story of what I did. I'm Justin Sales, the host of The Wedding Scammer, a true crime podcast from The Ringer. And for 7 episodes, we're hunting a con man, a guy with a lot of aliases, a guy who's ruined a lot of weddings. And with the help of some friends, I just might be able to catch him. Listen to The Wedding Scammer on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Tara Palmieri. I'm Puck's senior political correspondent, and this is Somebody's Gotta Win. On this episode, I put a major Wall Street donor in the chair, Anthony Scaramucci of Skybridge Capital. You probably know him, though, from his epic stint in the White House. It lasted just a handful of days, and I've covered it very closely as a White House correspondent for Politico. Well, he now hates Trump, and he started this presidential cycle supporting the very hopeless Chris Christie campaign. Chris Christie didn't make it to Iowa, the first caucus state, and so now Scaramucci is all in for Biden. I wanted to know, how do Scaramucci's peers on Wall Street feel now that Biden and Trump are officially the nominees? Who are they hedging their bets for? Can Trump, who is in a cash crunch right now, I mean, $41 million behind the Democratic National Committee and the Joe Biden campaign, can he actually win any of them over? They typically are normie Republican donors that like deregulation and lower taxes, but they did not like the chaos of the Trump administration. But might they hold their noses and donate to the Trump campaign in exchange for a seat on his economic council or a cabinet posting or access? Or maybe some influence on a policy that Trump may be deciding. The Mooch, as he's known, has a contrarian view on what the next administration will look like. And it might give some people hope who are terrified of a Trump 2.0. Anthony, thanks so much for coming on the show. We go back to the beginning of the Trump White House 2017 when you were comms director for 10 days.
You guys in the journalist community, it was 11 days. If you start on the 21st, and you get your ass fired on the 31st, count the days. Even Trump, when he tweets nasty stuff about me, says 11 days.
Right.
Don't get me out of 11%, 9.1% of my federal career. All right, but go ahead.
Thank you for fact checking me on that. Well, those 11 days were very momentous to me. I remember, I think on day one, when you landed from the shuttle, the New York to DC shuttle, I called you and I said, I heard that you were about to fire a leaker in the comms department. And you said, oh my God, how did you find out? Can you hold it until I actually fire this person? I'm going to fire them at this time. And I said, fine. I reported it. And you called me back and you said, why did you report that? I was like, you told me you were going to fire him at this time. And you looked at your watch and you're like, oh shit, I didn't have a chance to do it yet. So we found out about it through Politico because of bad timing. But yeah, it was a wild, wild west.
You know, Spicer quit before I could fire him. I don't know if you remember that part of it, right?
So
that
was a quit. It's like, you're fired, I quit.
But, you know, it's interesting because I was in the Miami airport yesterday and I ran into Jared Kushner and he reminded me of the whole Bannon fiasco, you know, meaning like how bad Bannon was. And listen, look at what Bannon's doing to Trump now. He's now saying Trump was bought by the Chinese. So Bannon is really, of all of the rogue figures that have come out of the Trump White House, Bannon is by far the worst. Do you know why I still believe in God, Tara? Do you want to know why?
Yeah, tell me.
Because Bannon is very smart. He's very charismatic. He's very well read. But God made him so ugly, Tara, to save civilization.
El Diablo.
From Steve Bannon. You know, you see what I'm saying? He's got a contemporary hobo look. He looks like an aging alcoholic. Okay, this is to save civilization from Steve Bannon, because Steve Bannon,
I mean, there's still a huge following. They can look past that. They see the, you know, they say beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
But just not
enough.
He has
a huge following. It's terrifying.
He does, but just not enough. Okay, but he can articulate the Trump doctrine better than Trump. Okay, so remember what these guys want to do. They want to wall off the country, literally and figuratively, take the country back to the 1890s, where our production and our consumption was 97.5%. And they want to disavow the David Ricardo principle of global free trade. And while doing that, okay, they want to create a quasi-authoritarian state. Okay, so these are super miserable people. And I think the good news is the majority of people understand that. So we'll stop them this time again, like we had to in 2020.
Yeah, we'll see. But just to go back to what you first mentioned about Jared Kushner, when you saw him in the airport, did you get the feeling that he's ready to join the campaign again or go into the White House? Did he give you any indication?
Well, he said no. I asked him point blank. He said no.
I figured you would.
Yeah, but I mean, he's got to say no. But I also think that the problem is that I think he got too much credit in Trump's mind related to a lot of good things that happened in the administration. And by the way, my opinion, Jared's a very reasonable, thoughtful guy and was instrumental on the Abraham Accords. Mm. But remember, all roads lead back to Donald Trump. All attention leads back to Donald Trump. There's one spotlight. It's a one-man show. Mm. Anybody that gets credit, or there's no sharing of credit. And so I think that credit piece hurts Jared. And so, you know, maybe he won't be in the administration, but, you know, listen.
He's probably going to be involved in the campaign in some way, though, don't you think?
I think so. I mean, look, it probably already is a little bit. Anything can happen in American politics. So we've learned that, unfortunately, the hard way. But no, listen, I like Jared, and Jared was a stable force in that administration. Mnuchin was a stable force in that administration, and they stopped Trump from doing certain things that would have just not been in the interests of the U.S. and, frankly, due to Trump's impetuosity, not even in the interest of Donald Trump.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll get to that a little bit further. I wanted to go into like the mind of a donor, a major donor, because you are one, right? You were a major donor to Chris Christie this cycle. You gave him $100,000. You've been a major donor to Jeb Bush in the past, Scott Walker. But recently, I know you've taken like a conversion into Democratic politics as well. You seem to be kind of giving to both sides. Like, I noticed that you've donated to people like progressive Ro Khanna. He's a, you know, congressman, to another congressman, Patrick McHenry from North Carolina, who's a friend of Kevin McCarthy. He's runs the Financial Services Committee. He's a Republican, to Josh Gottheimer, a more moderate Democrat, to Kyrsten Sinema, who's the bane of the Democratic Party's existence, but she's a more moderate Democratic senator, to Mondaire Jones, who is very progressive, pro-Palestine. And then you even gave a donation to George Santos. I was wondering if you could sort of just explain to me what is the thinking behind all of these, all your generosity?
The giving is atypical because people like to be in a sleeve, just like they like to be in the media in a certain sleeve. So if Sean Hannity believes or doesn't believe something, he's going to sit on that right-leaning sleeve because it's purposeful for his ratings. It's the same thing on the left. And so, but the giving, people like to give in a concentrated way to one party because they're looking for something. Okay. And they're either looking to lobby somebody or they're looking for something. And so my giving
access is too.
Access. So looking for access. So
like Patrick McHenry is on the Financial Services Committee. He's the chairman.
Exactly.
So and you work in finance.
And I work in finance. But here's the good news. I'm a small company. This is a small business. I'm not a regulated bank. And so I don't need access to Patrick McHenry. And I've never met Patrick McHenry in his offices on the Hill. and I've never asked them for anything. And moreover, you could go over those other people. I'm actually doing a fundraiser for Rokana here in New York City on March 28th. And primarily because I think he's a good guy and he's a force for good, right, in the American government. The fact that he's pro-crypto is also something I like. And so if you go down that list again, I can give you specific reasons.
But you guys invest in Bitcoin too, right, at your company?
We do. We do. And he's Bitcoin. And I will be giving, and I've already given to John Deaton, who's running against Elizabeth Warren, who I think is a regressive, and I think she's a human disaster in the Senate. And so I will do a fundraiser for him. And if he wants me to campaign for him up in Massachusetts, I will definitely do that for him.
What about George Santos, though? What was up with that?
So George Santos, because, you know, I'm a straight shooter. So I was involved with FTX. That was Sam Bankman-Fried's company. Very well documented that he bought a piece of my business. Unfortunately, he committed fraud and the company had to go bankrupt. But he had a colleague named Ryan Salam. And Ryan has also pled guilty to some campaign finance violations. His girlfriend, Michelle Bond, was running in New York District 1. She lost the primary. So I was asked as a favor to Michelle Bond, could I give some money to George Santos alongside of Michelle Bond? And so in the summer of, I want to say it was 21, it could have been 22, I did a fundraiser in Southampton for Michelle Bond. George Santos showed up at that fundraiser. And so I ended up giving him a couple $1,000 alongside Michelle. I didn't know George. And then it turns out that George
lied. How would you really? It wasn't really revealed who he was until after he won, right?
Right. So what's interesting about the story is that have you been to one of our Salt conferences? I can't remember if you've been to one or not, but
I don't think I have because they're in Vegas, but I've been to like your mini event in New York. You do something in New York too.
Right. So I have a smaller event in New York, but there's a much larger event in Vegas.
Right.
George said that he spoke at that event in 2015. He would have been 28 years old at the time he spoke at the event. We looked through our records. Obviously we keep track of the badges, people coming in and out. Never was at the event. So
George Santos.
Yeah, he wildly inflated himself and he's a congenital liar. And he's one of the reasons why people have such cynicism for the American political system. But I did give to him, you know, I own all my shit, as you know, I don't back away.
Yeah,
from
I mean, listen, I'm not, I was just more interested because it's like, you obviously didn't, I don't think you would know who he was. Most of the press didn't cover him until after he won. But Chris Christie, I kind of want to talk more about because you gave him $100,000. That was a very, you know, substantial.
No, but I gave him more. That was $100,000 to the pack. And then Deirdre and I maxed out on the campaign. And then I did a fundraiser for him at the Hunt and Fish Club where we raised the money. So
do you think like it was like closer to $1 million, right? Or something like that?
I don't know if it got that high, to be honest. I mean, I think we targeted a million. I don't know. Did we raise a couple hundred thousand? I don't remember the exact numbers, but I gave him the max that I could give personally. Okay. And then I went to my friends and raised the money. So why did I do that? One, he's a personal friend. Number two, I believe in Chris Christie. Number three, I think he was really trying to explain the danger of Donald Trump. There's a very large group of Republicans that don't want to listen to that danger, and that's fine. But I want to be on the record on being on the right side of history, because 50 years from now, people are going to look back at this tragedy that has taken place, and they're going to say, okay, well, who supported Donald Trump? And I'll have to raise my hand. And then people will say, well, who realized that he was a scourge and a danger and changed their view? Who had the strength to change their view? And I will raise my hand. Kevin McCarthy, who could have put Donald Trump through the ropes in January of 2021, will not be able to raise his hand.
Right. So with Chris Christie, though, I always kind of thought to myself, just because like the map was not looking good for him, like he maybe could have won New Hampshire. So I just wondered, like, why is everyone throwing money at Chris Christie? I feel the same way about Nikki Haley. She was still getting money from Wall Street for so long. And was it just kind of like an exercise in softening up Trump ahead of the general election? Like, was that the thinking? Are they messengers? Because Chris Christie's on TV all the time. He was a very effective messenger in terms of like being a person on the stage. He was one of the few Republicans on the stage in the debates who actually took Donald Trump on. So was it kind of like, okay, we'll throw some money at this guy. He has no shot. He really didn't have a shot, let's be honest. He couldn't even win New Hampshire. But was it thinking like, okay, this guy's worth it. He's worth it because he puts a narrative out there and he gets exposure to the messaging that we want.
So you're obviously a seasoned political journalist, and that is a really good analysis by you. But I am a dreamer entrepreneur. Okay, I started with nothing. You got to, as an entrepreneur, you got to go from zero to one in a society. And so you can have zero to one moments in politics. Barack Obama is a zero to one moment. Barack Obama took on the political establishment of the Clintons. And I think Chris's mistake and Nikki's mistake, they're braver than me because they're willing to go into the fray. I'm not. But they needed to expand the market for Republicans. They needed to expand into the non-voter market and bring more voters into the fray. They weren't able to do that. They were trying to take Donald Trump on with Donald Trump supporters who are unstinting for Donald Trump. And so that was the mistake there. Barack Obama created a whole new market and pinched the Clintons in 08. I thought Chris was going to do that. Okay. And so I got that wrong. And, you know, Chris lost. And but that happens.
But
you
like
know?
Republican voters hate him. That's the crazy thing. Like he pulls low with Republicans. Like, I guess you were hoping that you might win over some like disaffected Democrats that left the party with Trump.
Non-voters. I was hoping there's a lot of moderate non-voters. The most powerful voting bloc in the United States, they vote the exact same way in every election. The most powerful voting bloc, 144 million people, the non-voter. As you know, we have less than 50% voter participation. But just imagine if you could create energy and activity for somebody that doesn't vote to say, you know what, this thing is really screwed up. I'm going to step back into the swimming pool and I'm going to vote for this candidate who makes common sense, is sensible, and doesn't have this fire-breathing, nonsensical, extremist rhetoric. And so I think that that can actually happen at some point, just not at this point.
What if there was like a pseudo spoiler candidate, right? Like a RFK or a, I don't know, someone who could maybe activate that non-voter, but like couldn't win. You know what I mean? The margin wouldn't be big enough to win, but would take enough votes away from Donald Trump. Would you support that person as a spoiler?
If I was confident they were taking votes away from Donald Trump, yes.
Okay.
Joe Biden needs to win this election for so many different reasons. But, you know, one of the main reasons is, you know, we're going to have to deal with Donald Trump in 2028, by the way. He will run at age 82 for the presidency after he loses this time.
So is Joe Biden right now. It's not surprising, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Look, these guys don't want to give up.
He'll run until he dies.
These baby boomers and these pre-baby boomers that have failed the country, the baby boomers are a failed political establishment. They destroyed the country. They overpromised. They undertaxed. They racked up $34 trillion of debt. And they have fallen prey to the lobbyists, and they no longer serve the interests of the American people, as evidenced by the policies and the lack of policies that come out of the Congress or the executive branch. So we need new energy, and the cynicism in Washington is, to me, it's like at an all-time high in my career. I'm in business now 36 years. I think this is the worst that I've seen it.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com.
Okay, so talk to me about Wall Street donors. Where are they at right now? Where are they hedging their bets? Are they hedging it on Biden reelection or Trump?
So I think the garden variety Democrats, the Robert Wolfs, those people are with Biden, the Steve Radners. They were the people that voted for Bill Clinton. They are the people that supported Barack Obama. They're with Joe Biden. I think the centrist Republicans that were with people like George W. Bush or Jeb Bush or Mitt Romney are on the sideline. Now, a few of them are in the boat with Trump, like Ambassador Johnson. Woody Johnson is in the boat with Trump. He was seen on stage with them at the South Carolina primary victory. But by and large, centrist Republicans on Wall Street are not delivering for the Republican Party right now, which is why they're upside down at the RNC. They're spending more than they're taking in, and which is why Trump is upside down inside the campaign, which is why he wanted to foment a takeover of the RNC. So he's not getting the big voters. Now, he's won the nomination again, and so that typically leads to people coming in. But I don't think that this will happen this time because he's actually bad for business. When you're associated and affiliated with him, you're outside of the mainstream now and it hurts your business.
But so many people have, you know, come around to Donald Trump, like Wall Street. Where do you think they're at right now with Donald Trump? Do they feel like they have to donate to him or the RNC to make sure that their business interests will be, you know, heard or they have access?
Look at the numbers, Tara. The numbers aren't there.
Yeah, but he just like officially became the nominee. Okay, yes, we know he's been the nominee for a long time, but literally, I think last night he became officially the nominee.
Okay, so let's revisit this in a few months. The answer to your question is maybe, but it doesn't feel likely. Because when I talk to these people, whether I'm, you know, at a conference or at the World Economic Forum, or I'm running into these people, they are reluctant to give to Donald Trump. They think it's going to hurt them. Mm. Just listed all the people that I've given to. So just imagine now you're a CEO somewhere and your name is on a list giving to Donald Trump, who is a racist, giving to Donald Trump, who's a white supremacist. It's just not a great look for a Wall Street CEO. Now, you may agree with some of Trump's policies, but I don't think you want to be affiliated with the man at this point in his career, given what he says and how he operates.
Are they worried about being on the wrong side of him if he's reelected, though? Will they give to the RNC in some sort of like workaround way?
I don't think they're giving to the RNC, but I think they just don't want to be on the ledger of Joe Biden either, because Trump has said very openly he's going after his political adversaries. He said he's going to use the Department of Justice to go after his political adversaries. He said he's going to try to pull FCC licenses from members of the media that are against him. He said this from the podium. I'm not making this up. I think people are afraid of Donald Trump. I think they are afraid that he wins and then they're subjected to his scrutiny or his tyranny or his Twitter account or Truth Social account. And so they're worried.
It's fear enough to make a donation, even if it's like a roundabout way. Because if you give to the RNC, you could arguably say, I didn't give directly to Donald Trump, right?
I think it's a good point. I think we'll have to see. Right now, that those numbers haven't showed up. I think you're making a good point. Maybe someone says, hey, I'm going to hedge my bet here and give some money to the RNC. And therefore, I won't be on Trump's ledger, but I'll be on the general ledger of the Republicans. It provides me with some air cover. I think that's a good point. By the way, I've also given to Tom Emmer. By the way, you missed him. I maxed out on Tom.
Tom Emmer's a Republican, third ranking Republican whip.
Yeah, he's the third ranking Republican. He's more normal than Mike Johnson. And he's also pro crypto. I mean, Mike Johnson is obviously not a normal guy. You can just tell by looking at him.
So I'm just sort of curious, like, I've heard John Paulson, who's a big guy on Wall Street, he's going to start raising money for Donald Trump. He wants to be Treasury Secretary. Mm-hmm. You know, you saw Gary Cohn last time. He ended up in the National Economic Council. And, you know, billionaire Jeff Yass, he's a TikTok investor, right? He gave $250,000 to Chris Christie during the primaries, and he just met with Donald Trump. And, like, he's a big fish, right, for Donald Trump to get. And it's interesting because Trump has been so against TikTok. And ever since the meeting, now he's saying he's for TikTok. Like, could you see, because Trump being in such a cash crunch, that he would be willing to sort of like change his policies based on these Wall Street white whales that come along?
You're the superstar political journalist, not me. You know, he's a weather vane in terms of his principles. He spins with the wind. So of course he's willing to do that. But you're mentioning these guys, they're all good guys. I like and know all of them, but they're all Wall Street iconoclasts. You're not mentioning the CEO of Goldman, the CEO of JP Morgan, the CEO of Morgan Stanley or Bank America. You're mentioning Wall Street iconoclasts who have built their own businesses, have made their own measure of success, have gotten to the billionaire status from their own business. And those guys are all unregulated. They're not regulated by the FDIC, the Regulatory Commission, the SEC, you pick it. And so they're all iconoclasts. And so Gary Cohen, you mentioned Gary. I have a great relationship with Gary. He's a great guy, but he was not a Trump donor. He came into the transition with his hand raised saying that he wanted a job in the administration. He's a very talented guy, and Trump was wise to put him in the administration. And so there will be some of that. You know that that will happen.
I've heard,
You know, I'll say something contrarian here. If Trump wins, he will not go with just loyalists. That is not his personality. He's a name dropper and he's a status seeker. So guys like Kevin McCarthy will end up in his administration. Okay, there will be a cavalcade of people that people are not assuming will go into the administration. They will make the mistake I made and McMaster made and Kelly made. They'll join Donald Trump thinking that they can help Donald Trump and thinking that it won't hurt their careers. Moreover, Trump will select them because Trump is a status seeker. So if somebody like you pick the CEO du jour,
Jamie Dimon, I've heard that they would love Jamie Dimon inside the administration.
So somebody like, I don't know Jamie well enough to opine. I don't know him well enough to opine on what he would do, but that is an example of somebody. If he wanted a job in the administration, Mr. Trump would not be able to resist that. And he would end up with a job in the administration. And Jamie is his own guy, right? And he's his own ego and his own force of personality. And so that will lead to a consistency to what happened in the first administration. There will be normal people in there blocking Donald Trump's nonsense if he ends up with the job. So a lot of people are saying, oh, he's only going to have his loyalists, and you'll have like all the Looney Tunes characters in the cabinet, like Yosemite Sam for Treasury and all this sort of nonsense, but that's not going to happen. Trump is too much of a status seeker, okay, and he's too much of a name dropper to allow that to happen.
So how does Wall Street, like you, it sounds like they're pretty resigned to the fact that Trump could be president. Like, do they see it the way that we see it, that there's a 50-50 chance?
Well, I mean, listen, I don't see it that way. But yes, I think people think there's a 60-40 chance that Donald Trump is going to win. I think they see
60 being Biden.
No, 60 Trump. Well, look at the predictive markets. No, I think Wall Street sees it 60-40 for Trump.
How do you prepare for that?
Me personally?
No, like how is Wall Street preparing for 60-40 Trump right now?
I think that what they will hope is that he will quietly deregulate. And then what they hope is that the regulators will get off their backs and there'll be some more taxation laxity because Mr. Trump is known for that. And I think they'll hope and pray that he departs after the end of 4 years.
So they like the policy. They don't like the chaos, essentially.
They like the policy. They don't like the chaos. And they don't like the threat to the democracy because Mr. Trump has been pretty explicit that by the way, just so you know, and I know you know this because you're a smart journalist, he knows he lost the last election. He knows that that's an election lie. He absolutely knows that. So the fact that he's not willing to say it publicly is a sign of his personal insanity. And so if you're a Wall Street guy that likes stable government and less volatility from the government, you don't want a nut job like that in the office of the presidency. Also, remember, he has said he's going to revoke the NATO treaty. He has said he's going to side with Putin on the Ukraine. Okay. And by the way, he's horrific for the Middle East because he's tied to Vladimir Putin, who's tied to the Iranians. Okay. So, I mean, everybody should think out of the box a little bit. He's not going to be there to help Israel. It's not his personality. He just was for TikTok today. He was against TikTok yesterday. He was for Israel last week, but now he's in bed with Vladimir Putin. Where did the $91 million bond come from, Tara? You're a smart person. Where did the money come from Chubb when they posted that bond?
I don't mean off the top of my head, I don't know.
Okay, well, we don't. Nobody knows. Well, that's the point. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
But it's a foreign subsidiary of Chubb. So you got a lot of guys in the national security establishment saying, hey, this is a national security issue for the United States. This is the most un-American candidate to be put forth in front of the American people by any of the two normal parties in the American system. And so we have to beat them, you know, and we will beat them.
But Anthony, there's one thing, and you and I both noticed this, that his campaign is being run much better than it's ever been run before.
No question. He's on message. He's very disciplined. He was disciplined in South Carolina. He's got three superstars on that campaign. And I'm still very close to Jason Miller, who I think is a communications superstar. Mm. And so he's got all those things, but he has
Chris LaCivita, Susie Wiles, and Jason Miller.
Yeah, Susie Wiles, Jason Miller. They're all very talented. I know every one of them, and they're all very, very talented. But they got one thing going against them in that campaign.
Their product?
Donald Trump. Donald Trump is going against them. He's a hated figure. He's a mean, menacing white supremacist and racist, and he's anti-American. He wants to roll back the post-World War II architecture that was set up by our grandparents that have led to great peace and prosperity for America, and he wants to destroy that. He's an orange wrecking ball who wants to diminish the institutions of the American democracy.
We know he has more professional people around him. He's able to execute a better campaign, but what does that mean for the White House and his ability to execute his policies?
Well, I think you're going to get the mixed bag that you got in 2017. I'm meaning he'll bring in some loyalists and he'll bring in some people that are not loyal to him that want power to feed their egos, and he'll want them because it feeds his ego that they're going to be at the table with him.
So you think there'll be a constant fight, and that that sort of tension means that he won't be able to execute his extreme policies the way that he wants to. So they might actually be a saving grace.
I believe that. Yes, I believe that. I think that's contrarian. I think most people think it's going to be all loyalists and he's going to run it like an autocratic machine. He just doesn't have the organization skills or the executive management skills to pull that off, thank God.
Who do you think are going to be the quote unquote martyrs that, you know, go into the Trump White House to try to like stop the train or derail it?
You tell me who has big egos. Okay, you give me the list of the big egos and I'll say 50% of them will go in.
Okay, can I name some?
Go ahead, name some. Go ahead.
I mean, Steve Cohn. Do you think he would go into the White House?
I would say no. I know Steve well. I'd be surprised at that. Okay, go to the next one.
Do you think Jamie Dimon would go into the White House?
It's a good question. I don't know Jamie well enough. I think if Trump was a normal guy, if it was Mitt Romney or Barack Obama, I think Jamie Dimon would. I don't know Jamie well enough to know if he would go into a Trump administration.
What about John Paulson?
He's extremely talented, Jamie Dimon. He would be great in public service. John Paulson, yes.
You think Gary Cohn would go back?
Yes.
Do you think, you know, Jeff Yass would try to get a job in the administration?
Don't know him well enough, so I can't opine on that, to be honest.
What about Steve Mnuchin? Do you think he'd go back into the administration?
So I personally don't. A lot of his friends say that he would and that he's open to it. He did a great job in that administration and he would be a value-added player and he understands Trump's personality about as well as anybody. So I would want him to, but I think he's had his full of that. That's my opinion.
Larry Kudlow?
Yes, 100%.
100%. Yeah, he's probably already getting ready right now. 100%.
I think he's shining his shoes. Yep.
But like, what about people like Paul Singer and Ken Griffin? Do you think they'll ever come over to Trump and help him in terms of like giving donations or, I mean, they're part of the American Opportunity Alliance. They've been supportive of Tim Scott, who might be his vice president, Katie Britt. Like I did write about this, that Trump is looking at vice presidents, not just for what they offer in terms of voters, but more so what they offer in terms of donors.
Those two guys I have an enormous amount of respect for. And I think they generally are giving for policy, not necessarily for politics. So they may end up giving if it's to promote certain policies, but I don't see either of them going into the administration. But again, that's just me.
But do you see them ultimately giving money to Trump if they can get like one of their people in as vice president?
I think it would be policy congruent. So in other words, here's a policy that's being supported. Are you going to give money to that? I think they would do that. I don't think that they're just going to write a blank check to Donald Trump. But if you said to me, okay, here's a policy that they support and that money needs to go into this to support that policy, I think they would. And Paul Singer, by the way, has been masterful with the Supreme Court. He gave a lot of money to help those candidates get through the approval process in the Senate.
The Federalist Society.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically you're saying like, this is how these people go to sleep at night. if they feel like at the end of the day, the money goes toward a policy they believe in, or it helps their bottom line in some ways.
Well, again, I don't know them well enough to be inside their brains. I'm just going off of the actions, right? Because actions always speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. Just follow the trail of their giving, and then you can reverse engineer what the thought process is.
Do you think there would be any way in which they would end up supporting a third party candidate that could spoil Trump?
I don't think so, because I think it's, as you know, these third party candidates are very hard.
And it would be seen as an attack on Trump, and it might close the door, yeah, right?
And Ralph Nader caused the Gore to lose that election. You know, the Green Party helped Donald Trump in 2016, as you know.
Right. Fascinating conversation. I wish I could have you for a half hour longer, Anthony. So much in your brain to share.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on your career, okay? Because you have that Italian persistence and tenacity that I enjoy, okay? You know, no matter what's happening, like straight ahead and plowing ahead.
Thank you.
And you were great on Bill Maher last week. God bless. I hope to see you more on that show.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was really fun. So happy to have you on. Would love to have you on the show more often.
Well, invite me back. When Trump loses, though, am I going to be able to take a victory lap on your show? Because I want to. Okay.
Well, you'll get a full victory lap.
Okay. Trump is going to lose the election, and I want to be in the car, in the Batman car, taking the victory lap on your show. Is that okay?
That's totally fine. I am not certain that Trump will lose the election, so I'm not going to place bets right now.
Right.
I think you have a bet that you have some money behind.
This is a contrarian bet because it's 60-40
right
against what I'm saying.
I know.
And remember, here's one piece of evidence. In Davos, Switzerland in January, 3,000 delegates, I think 2,999 of them thought Trump was going to handily win the election. And those people are always wrong. They said Hillary Clinton was going to win in 16. They said Trump was going to win in 20. Not going to win the election.
Got it. Well, we'll circle back around. Actually, I hope to circle back around with you earlier than that. But thanks so much.
All right.
Appreciate your time.
Eric, God bless. All right.
Talk soon.
Be well. You too.
Thanks. Thanks, Anthony. That was another episode of Somebody's Gotta Win. I'm Tara Palmieri. I want to thank my producers, Christopher Sutton and Connor Nevins. If you like my podcast, please subscribe, rate it, share it with your friends. If you like my reporting, please go to puck.news/Tara Palmieri and sign up for my newsletter, The Best and the Brightest. You can use the discount code TARA20 for 20% off. I'll be back on Tuesday.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.